Andrew Bentley.
Alright, I kind of hate to bring the mood back down now after like all the good funny stories that happened here.
Do it, make a dick joke, and we'll be fine.
Yeah, it's cool. usually I like to do kind of tongue-in-cheek stuff, and I don't know, for family, there's something a little more personal I wanted to talk about. So, if I were to say the present is defined by its immediacy, the assertion might strike you as meaningless. An insipid tautology requiring little thought, less scrutiny. And I would agree, but I aver it anyway as a basis from which to add that in that immediacy, there is a cruel distance. Overwhelmingly, the present affords nothing but the experience itself, and that act of experiencing robs events of their context, reducing the most momentous of phenomena to component banalities. This heartbeat, this breath, the flash of light against the lens of our eye, an atomic bomb detonating one nucleus at a time. Consequently, it is rare that we recognize our watershed moments as we live them. Instead, they stand like pylons in an ebbing tide, looming out of the past an inch at a time as the ocean recedes before us. If we could peer ahead, through prescience or chaos theory, to the final act of our mortality, every shot fired and point counted, would we live wiser lives? Would we balk at our scarred hides and deny our consignment, or like Cassandra would we but weep bitter tears at our inevitable tragedies, born of unseen decisions we cannot hope to puzzle or divine? With every choice, each word, each breath, we travel a thousand simultaneous vectors, tumbling and cascading off each other, subtly altering the trajectories of friends and lovers and strangers and, perhaps most tellingly, family. I have an older sister, and while the 4 years separating us now seem inconsequential, not so many birthdays passed, those 1,487 days spelt the difference between subject and God. I worshipped her, took her word as gospel, and she in turn cradled me in the sunshine of her grace. There were barbs, of course. She ruled neither wisely nor quietly. But if I was once found weeping on the sofa, convinced my severing of a do-not-remove tag meant I was soon to be arrested by the mattress police. That was balanced by my own favorite joke, wherein I would wait patiently by her bedside in the morning, chin on her pillow, so that her first sight on awakening would be my contorted gargoyle rictus. This game, incidentally, was in turn purchased by at least one bloody nose, but even then I was aware that comedy came at a price. My sister loved comedy. When she would stumble upon me reading my anthologies of Foxtrot or Calvin and Hobbes, she would sit beside me and we would read the panels out loud together, a cast of two. Under her direction, I filmed my first sketch on the family camcorder, an interview program where we assumed the roles of various costumed oddballs, trading off the role of straight man in alternating segments. She was never a diligent student, but she loved assignments with a creative component, and I was often on call to help, as Jack from Lord of the Flies, or by lending my monstrously camp lisp to a Barbie doll rendition of the Odyssey. This gay caricature, in which my sister took a proprietary joy, reached both its apex and nadir in the aforementioned sketch show, where, among other characters, we invented the brilliantly satirical figure of Bob Faggot. The joke was that I wore my mom's lingerie and lipstick. Neither she or Dad got it, and the character was quickly banned. But as true auteurs, we were undeterred. It was not critical response that ended our collaboration, or even the inexorable advance of time, although I'm sure my impending puberty would soon have stripped our hijinks of their juvenile charm. Rather, my professional relationship ended the day my sister ran away from home. She was gone for weeks, and then on Christmas Eve, she returned. It isn't my place to discuss my sister's own struggles, though I would never minimize or dismiss them. Suffice to say, she returned a different person. She had brought us presents, but later she confided to me that they were stolen. The tree was decorated, but she had not been there to share my helplessness when our father put down his ornament, collapsed onto the couch, and openly wept. With unaccustomed boldness, I leveled the accusation some days after her return. "I've made Mom and Dad cry plenty of times," she bragged, and in that moment I knew that I hated her more than anyone in the world. In the months that followed, I learned first to fear her moods, then to mimic them. I developed a black anger of my own that came through in my schoolwork, landed me in the counselors. I fought at school as I didn't dare at home, where my sister once dug her nails into my arm so hard she drew blood in 5 places. Family gatherings were things to dread, and I would flee the dinner table before the last drop of milk had passed my tongue. And then things got better. There was no illuminating spark, only a long sunrise, and it was years after she had graduated, moved out, returned, and left again, that I suddenly realized we were friends once more. Now I couldn't even point to our bad times on a calendar, or compass their scale in days or years. Yet I can occupy them in an instant, with baleful accuracy, like a divot in an otherwise smooth plane filled merely by the passing of thought. I remember what it was like, and I can feel it. That Christmas, my sister's bitter words, her nails my arm, I can feel it destroying my life, ruining me. But the thing is, it never did. My family has a history of depression. I love my sister, dearly. And if I hadn't learned about the vulnerability of our lives at her hands, I would have learned it from some other betrayal. That Christmas is one of the defining moments of my life, but it didn't change who I am. Erica did. Every time she dug out the camera, or handed me a costume, or sat and read with me. She taught me to perform, to create, to love those things. She taught me that people might actually be interested in the things that I could do. She probably doesn't even know she taught me these things. I didn't for a very long time. I only hope that I changed her too. Not in a big way, but in a way that matters. In a way she can be proud of. Because I'm proud of her. Thank you.
Andrew Batley, everybody. I feel like this is really special, you guys. I'm not even kidding about this. Like, I love doing this.